I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
It was the perfect setting for this marriage of people who came from such different sections of society, but who were each in possession of something the other needed. Almina's paternity was the subject of a great deal of rumor, and no amount of fine clothes or immaculate manners could gain her access to the salons of the grand ladies who quietly ruled society. Almina had nonetheless secured a husband-to-be of the highest order, and she was dressed as befitted a woman who was making her ascent into the highest ranks of the aristocracy.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be the book Lady Almina and the Real Downton Abbey. Author Lady Fiona Carnarvon will join us on location in England to talk about Highclere Castle, Downton Abbey, and the remarkable Lady Almina, the fifth Countess of Carnarvon. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television. Capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we travel across the pond to discover a remarkable story woven within the fabric of both British and world history. In this very special edition of our program, we are honored to speak on location at Highclere Castle in Hampshire, England, with Lady Fiona Carnarvon. Lady Carnarvon is the author of the extraordinary new book, Lady Almina and the Real Downton Abbey, chronicling the amazing story of the fifth Countess. The Earl and Lady Fiona Carnarvon currently reside at Highclere Castle, which is the centerpiece home featured in the Emmy Award-winning PBS drama, Downton Abbey. Over the next few segments, Lady Carnarvon will not only help us relive virtually every aspect of the life and times of the fifth Countess, but will also take us through an extraordinary journey exploring the history of World War I, the discovery of King Tut's tomb, and the impact the popularity of Downton Abbey has had on her life and the life of Highclere Castle. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to drive on the other side of the road, feel free to join us for a spot of tea as we slip from the restraints of the present to experience a most ladylike past.
Lady Carnarvon, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
It's very nice to have you here at Highclere. Wonderful.
What inspired you to write your book, Lady Almina and the Real Downton Abbey?
I had known a bit about Almina for some years. I'd written the guidebook for her, so she's just one of the countesses along the way, and I thought she was the most remarkable woman. But it was quite hard to know where to start writing about her. And then when Julian Fellowes, luckily for me, turned the castle into a convalescent home for Downton Abbey, I thought, what an opportunity. And I can write about the real woman. There's a jolly good chance of it being published. So I had three or four publishers come along and see me, which was fine. And then Hodder Sturton were just charming and sent me a bunch of flowers. So I thought, oh, how nice. And they were just so sweet. And then they said they'd very much like to publish it. And this was in April. And they'd like me to write 72,000 words by the 7th of July.
Wow.
And because I hadn't written a book before, I didn't know what a mountain it was to climb. So I said, absolutely fine. And then realised when I worked it out, it was actually quite a lot. But I thought, compared to what Almina did, I was blooming well going to do it. And it was such a chance to be published. It was a thoroughly sensible commercial decision from them and myself in order to bring it out when Downton Abbey came out here and when it came out in America in January. So I've been very lucky, and Random House took it to the States. So I have been very lucky with it.
Now, your book is multi-layered in terms of the history that it covers, political, social, and personal histories. How did you decide to best structure your book to cover such a broad canvas of history?
It was quite ambitious, wasn't it, for the first book? And I was tackling the First World War. Luckily, I love the First World War and the poetry of it, and that to me is that the poets and the poetry are extraordinary collection of genius from that time. So I had read a lot about it, and I'd also studied German and read a lot of German history and literature from the period too, because I feel it was a tragedy which we all took part in, and it ended in a fairly tragic way with nobody thinking they'd won or lost. So the whole thing was awful for the families who had lost so many members of their family. And then I simply looked at it and thought, well, the heart of it is the First World War, the Edwardian period descending into the blood and the mud of it, and then what happened afterwards. For me, the last section was very straightforward because I had this wonderful thing with the discovery of Tutankhamun. Mm-hmm. So having got through the First World War, and I felt devastated and collapsed with exhaustion when I was writing it, I then could pick myself up because I had the devastation to try to convey, but I had this extraordinary discovery. So I then went up towards the treasurer of Carnarvon and Carter and Tutankhamun, and then obviously went straight into tragedy and a curse. So as an author, I was pretty lucky. Yes.
You mentioned that you were devastated. I was surprised when I read your book how frank it was in terms of the graphic depiction of war. How did you decide where that line was and how frank you were going to be? Because there are some incredible images that are conjured up in that section.
Well, that, as I said, that was the heart of it. That was my middle chunk. So actually, I firstly wrote the history of the First World War. I did that in summary, you know, going through all the battles from Mons, in where we started the First World War in France in September 1914. And I went through all the major battles, including some of the ones on the Russian front, all the way through until 1918. So I had that pageantry behind me of what happened and where we were fighting as a world. It was the First World War. And then I found the gardeners, who obviously went out to Iraq, where many of them died, right. Or Aubrey Herbert was a wonderful character for me, who covered so many different theatres of the war, to set them against it. So that was my plan. So I hope I knew all the facts about the Battle of the Somme or Passchendaele. And when I go and give lectures and presentations, my knowledge is, I hope, fairly complete, still there. And I then read all about the history of surgery in the First World, which I hadn't done. And I spent some time in the Royal Army Medical Corps by Sandhurst, by Camberley. They were very welcoming, the museum there. So they have an extraordinary library and pointed me in the right direction, which I also found interesting. And that was quite an esoteric subject, so it was quite fun to bring that out into a wider genre. So I hoped I was, you know, jack of all trades, I suppose, and master of none. And in the end, I was crying, and I hoped I'd make people laugh and cry. And the letters that I was reading, I mean, I can't tell you, I found it really quite tricky and moving. And I wanted to try and convey some of that through my writing. Some of it, the editors at Hodder's, you know, actually lessened a little bit because it had to keep moving on, and I had to have a happy ending. Well, I like happy endings. Cinderella all the way. But it meant a lot to me, actually, and I feel very... The other thing that meant a lot to me was there was Almina, extraordinary woman who gave her money, her life and her time to other people, to strangers. It's a very deeply Christian way of living. It's going out there and saying, welcome, and you don't know them, and I'm going to make you better. Do whatever I can to help you. Whether it was little bits of money to help them sort out an overdraft because the army hadn't paid them. The small things that she did as well, or little telegrams, or a billet-doux to their families to give them a rail fare to come and visit them. I found the small things so moving. So I had a chance to write about a woman who was completely unrecognised, and she didn't do it for recognition. She did it because she felt she should. And to write about a woman who lived in one of these houses. Because if you think about it, it's usually about the men here. It's the home of the Earls of Carnarvon, the Earls of Pembroke, the Dukes of Rutland, the Dukes of Devonshire, etc., etc., the Dukes of Northumberland. Right. And I think beside every successful Duke or Earl or Marquess, there's usually a pretty hard-working wife. So I figured it was a fantastic thing to write. And they were as good support. It was like kind of two oak trees growing side by side, not on top of each other, but their roots and connections gave them strength. So it was an interesting relationship for me to develop and follow, given that I had married the current Earl. So you're sort of looking for what your predecessors did and how they lived.
What are the qualities of Lady Almina that you admire the most?
I think her emotional generosity, her extraordinary kindness to other people, and how I suspect that she went the last mile and more. She must have had tremendous strength of personality and physical strength to keep going, mm-hmm. and she managed to balance it. I'm not saying she was perfect at all, and she obviously had an in and out relationship with her son, mm-hmm. who became the next Earl, and but he was growing up apart from her.
Right.
You know, in school and in the war. She was closer to her daughter. So I think there were difficulties there, but I think we all have that with children. You have difficult cycles of life and then they come together more. She sadly didn't have the time to come together more with her son, which would have happened if her husband had continued to live, because her son would have gone into the army, carried on with his life, and, you know, perhaps they might have been more joined up. But I'm researching a sequel to Almina, and it's very nice because I find her coming back here
really?
In Christmases and years to come. So that's quite fun.
Was there anything about Lady Almina that you could particularly relate to?
I think that it's quite hard work. So I think you never stop here, which I think is very different to what you see on Downton Abbey when, you know, Elizabeth McGovern or Cora is having a little tete-a-tete with O'Brien. And I can't think when I last had a chance to have a tete-a-tete with a member of staff, you know, about some small minutiae. I think it is hard work, and there's always people around, so you have no privacy. And I think that's today as it was then. And in some ways today it's come back, the castle has come back today in a way that Almina might recognise, because there's so many people around. We have a very public face. It's alive and buzzing and warm, full of people who are enjoying themselves, I would hope, and having a look around. And she shared this house with many people, and she tried her best for her husband and his family. So I think things like that, you do definitely see similarities.
Well, you mentioned Downton Abbey. How has that impacted your life since it became so popular, has become so popular?
It has become
worldwide.
Popular. Well, I know, it's amazing. And in America, above all,
which
is extraordinary. And I think back to the first season, which was shot here, quite relaxed, rather laid back, you know, quite kind of chilled out. And then I'd called Emma Fellows, who's married to Julian Fellows, who wrote and created the series before it came out. I remember a little conversation saying, well, do you think anyone's going to watch it? I hope they are. You know, we were hoping for figures, and obviously it went on from there. So I think what has changed is that we're now one of the most famous, or the most famous stately home in England, and instantly recognisable the house is, which is an extraordinary and very helpful position for the house to be in a very difficult economic time. So I am very grateful for that. I think Downton Abbey, however, has been a great success for ITV, for Carnival and NBC, for the actors, the actresses, for Judy and Emma Fellows, who I hope are King and Queen of Hollywood now with their successful script writing. So, and for this as a house, which is the sort of the central character part through which all the threads of Julian's stories are woven and which holds them together as a framework, because there's a lot of different story threads going on, which is so clever. So, you know, people can say, I wonder if Bates is going to be all right,
right,
or poor Anna, or you can say, is O'Brien going to carry on? So whatever excites you, there's so many different characters. But I think, again, the house is a holding point in the middle, which otherwise in a story is quite, can be, if we're following sort of 18 major characters, it's quite a lot, isn't it? It's quite ambitious. So, but Julian does it with tremendous flair. And now we have New World Meets Old with Shirley MacLaine and Maggie Smith.
Right.
So what a laugh.
We're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with Lady Carnarvon on location at Highclere Castle in Hampshire, England, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.